As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks for hanging out with me. After the Bills got through with their third and final preseason game, they defeated the Chicago Bears on the road by a score of 24-21, improving their preseason record to 2-1, even though that is meaningless. But the bigger storyline here is that is the last bit of game action we will see before cuts are due on Tuesday, August 29th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And this third preseason game is always kind of a proving ground for those guys on the bubble. Maybe it's a clarification or a confirmation of things that that the Bills might be leaning toward. Maybe someone just completely catches their eye and they're worried about not being able to get them through waivers. It all kind of plays into it, so even though it was mostly meaningless, we got to see some of what they were thinking in terms of their depth chart, and maybe some under-the-radar stuff that maybe the Bills are kind of showing, signaling, as we get closer to cutdown day. So we're going to head through some of the biggest decisions that they have on the roster and kind of talk through it, just because it's that time of year. And this is one of the most compelling times. And we have, for the first time, the Bills needing to get down to 53 from 90 after the final preseason game. So there's that many more decisions that have to be made. But there are also plenty of ways to kind of look at how their depth chart could be setting up as well. So we're going to really just dive headfirst into it. And by all means, if you haven't checked out my 53-man roster projection, the final one, I have posted it. It has been up since pretty much a few minutes after the game went final in Chicago. And I have all 53 on there. There's a few surprises. I won't get into basically everything that I did in there, but I'll start to explain even more than in those little blurbs what I was thinking with a lot of that here on this podcast today. So let's kick things off with what I believed to be the most, I guess, essential storyline of that third preseason game, and that's with what the Bills are going to do at backup quarterback. We had a pretty good idea based on the fact that Matt Barkley did not participate at all in practice the week leading up to the Bears game, that it was only going to be Josh Allen and Kyle Allen available. And because the Bills probably didn't want to overuse Josh Allen all that much, and getting that check of the box first drive to where Josh Allen and the starting offense go down and get the touchdown, that's like, all right, get Josh out of there, get Stephon Diggs out of there, get Mitch Morse out of there. get the important guys out before the preseason claims an injury or something like that. So we had a good idea that this was going to be the Kyle Allen show for most of the game. And the Kyle Allen that we saw is basically everything that we have seen throughout training camp and even in the two preseason games leading up to this one. The thing about Kyle Allen is that turnovers come into play far too often. It happened again early on in his showing when the Bears were still, you know, not in their depths of the defensive roster. Throwing that interception on a bad ball, that's one of those, and then getting hit with a strip sack and losing the ball on that, that's another two turnovers for Kyle Allen, adding to the pick that he had in the Colts game and a bunch of turnovers he had throughout the summer in practices. Like, those were a commonality. And on top of that, it's not just the turnovers, because that's a piece of the puzzle. But it's really the inconsistency, the inaccuracy. Sometimes he just completely misses on these throws. And to me, if I'm sitting there and going, okay, let's say I'm the GM here, and we're looking at this roster as, okay, this team has a chance to make it to the Super Bowl this year, which I think they do. They're deep, they're talented, and, you know, maybe they're getting counted out by some others, but they have arguably more talent and more depth this year than they had a year ago, certainly on the offensive side of the ball. And that's where it really matters most for this team. But that's not the point of the exercise. If you have this roster that you think can make it all the way, and then you also realize, hey, Josh Allen plays a pretty physical brand of quarterback. Like, he's going to get out, he's going to scramble, he's going to make himself liable to hits. And what happened last year, and even 2 years ago, I think back to that Tampa Bay game where Allen just made this great run, then gets a little banged up. It was that, remember the walking boot scare where he came into the press conference after the Tampa game in a walking boot and people were freaking out because it was getting close to the end of the season, things like that. But that's what he puts himself in jeopardy of happening. So you would probably want a backup quarterback that can at least come in and give you a little bit more hope that you might win a game. I always think about this way of looking at it. For a backup quarterback, like, you're not going to be getting someone that's crazy good, right? It's just not how it goes. I mean, unless you're investing a lot of money into it. Usually, if you're investing a lot of money into it, you're not sure about your starter. If you're sure about your starter and you have a ton of cap space invested in that player, then you're probably not investing a ton in the backup. But when you have the potential of Josh Allen maybe missing games, let's say he misses 5 games this year, just a random number. Let's say he misses 5 games. How many of those games are you confident that Kyle Allen can come out and help guide the team to a victory? How many of those is he costing them a victory? If your backup quarterback is not putting you in a spot where you could comfortably think that you could win 2 out of those 5 games, it's probably best to think about another backup quarterback. And that's where it kind of lands for me with Kyle Allen. You know, could he be a good third stringer? Absolutely. I just don't know for this team, where they are right now, if I would feel confident in him stepping into a game and going, all right, he can mind the store And at the very least, he can play turnover-free football and allow the defense and allow the playmakers around him just to kind of go with it. I'm not sure that's in his range of outcomes, which is why I think the Bills need to make a move. Brandon Bean confirmed that they inquired about Trey Lance, which is quite interesting for a lot of different reasons. But just at the surface level, it means they're poking around the backup quarterback market. And by proxy, that also means that they probably wouldn't have done so had they been happy with what they've seen at backup quarterback. Now, Kyle Allen, every once in a while, he can hit a great throw. Like, that throw to Quentin Morris was awesome. It was a dime. And he's got good zip on his throws, and he can really just lace one in there. But it's what he does all the other time. Just constant inaccuracy. Inconsistency. Turnover. Turnover-worthy plays. I just don't know that the Bills can go into the season with Kyle Allen as their backup thinking that they're in a good spot. So what I ultimately settled on in my 53-man roster projection was for the Bills to go and trade for someone that they know really well, and that's Case Keenum. It's not the most ideal situation by any means because Case Keenum is 35 years old and not sure that, well, I am sure he is not running a similar style of offense as Josh Allen just because he's not the same quarterback as Allen. Keenum is all about timing, accuracy, and hitting players on underneath throws. But at the very least, that is a mining the store style of quarterback that I think would go better than with what the Bills have right now. So while it's not like, hey, he's going to come in and he's going to be a threat to win every single game, it's okay, he is going to set up their playmakers to do their thing rather than undo the entire operation based on mistakes. And the other reason why I like Keenum, who, if you're unfamiliar, he's in a situation in Houston where he is the third string quarterback in Houston behind CJ Stroud, who they selected early in the first round this year, and Davis Mills, who was mostly their starter last year. Davis Mills has been their backup. Case Keenum, his contract this year is fully guaranteed. He signed through 2024. I believe $1 million of his base salary is guaranteed next year. So you have a backup next year if you would like to keep him for that. But would the Texans keep a veteran? Would they want to keep a veteran quarterback where maybe they can recoup a pick that they just shipped out for the offensive tackle they just acquired by trading away Case Keenum? And it's a good fit for the Bills because Keenum knows the offense. He has worked with Dorsey. Josh Allen knows him. There's some comfort there. So it's not as though they're going out and getting someone completely different because chemistry in the quarterback room is huge to this organization. It's not going to cost you a ton because he's 35 years old and he's got a fully guaranteed contract, which is going to hit the cap for about $2.5 million this season. I think you could get him for a late round pick if the Texans are willing to sell. So I think it's a idea that makes a ton of sense. And you just got to read what the actions are showing you, and the actions are showing that the Bills haven't really been enamored with their backup quarterback play so far this preseason, and who can blame them? So yeah, keep an eye on the Bills making a move at backup quarterback. I could see them maybe even not making a move right at before the deadline. Maybe it comes after that, but you know, I think something should be done here. Because if Kyle Allen has to play some legitimate snaps, I don't know if that's going to be a good situation. So keep an eye on that. And then Matt Barkley's the other one in this equation. If they were to trade Keenum, I could see them throwing him on IR so that way they can keep him in the building. I'm sorry, throw Barkley on IR, just so I'm not confusing. So that way they can keep him in the building. And then with Kyle Allen, if they were to trade for Case Keenum, they get Kyle Allen, release him. He's not subject to waivers. Bring him back to the practice squad as long as nobody signs him. So, you know, there's a way to kind of have that room that you had, but still adding a more appropriate backup, I think is the way I would play this thing. So yes, much to be decided by the Bills on the backup situation, but yeah, I was not impressed by Kyle Allen's final showing of the summer.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, now we shift over to cornerback, and this isn't technically a crazy 53-man roster decision, but it's generating a lot of buzz, and for good reason, because that cornerback 2 spot is still up in the air. It's been between Dane Jackson, Christian Benford, and Kaiir Elam basically the entire summer. No one has taken a step forward. However, based on what I saw in the Steelers game and then a great week of practice after the Steelers game, in my mind, Christian Benford is the favorite at this point to be that starting cornerback. Made some really nice plays against the Bears as well, which will help his case. But also follow the actions. I can't stress that enough. Follow the actions of the organization. You can sit there and listen to whoever is talking at the podium say, hey, it's still an open competition. All these guys are still in the mix. But their actions and how they give out these reps is the most definitive thing you will see in the preseason leading up to the year. And when you have Christian Benford moving ahead of Dane Jackson to be that starter opposite Tre'Davious White, and then for Benford to be the first cornerback to be shut down of those three guys we're talking about, on top of him having a really good showing these last two games and in the practice week, it's a pretty telling thing. They have loved Christian Benford since they saw him take a step forward in training camp last year. He's a natural fit for zone. He's a good tackler. He knows where he's supposed to be. It all adds up. So Benford, in my mind, should be the favorite, should be viewed as the favorite to be the second cornerback to pair with Tre'Davious White. Now, maybe they do, just for the first game or so, a split rep thing. But the Bills have always wanted it to just be one guy. And having Benford be that guy every single snap, if he shows he can do it, I would at least give him the opportunity to show that, because you got him signed through the 2025 season. If he wins that job and doesn't look back, then you have that locked in with Tre'Davious White for the long term here, or for the, I guess, 3 years is the long term in NFL view. And then you figure out the depth from there. So basically how the cornerback rotation went down. The first defensive series, it was Tre'Davious White and Christian Benford. The second defensive series, Tre'Davious White and Christian Benford. The third one, Dane Jackson and Christian Benford. So that's when Tre'Davious's day was done. The fourth one, Kyir Elam comes in for Christian Benford to pair with Dane Jackson. The fifth one, Kyir Elam with Jamarcus Ingram. And Kyir Elam goes on to play, after those two series, the following three series. Another with Jamarcus Ingram and two with Alex Austin. Playing all the way through the third quarter. That is a significant action as to where Kyir Elam is in their mind. In terms of both the starting competition and on the depth chart at cornerback. Elam has struggled. And he struggled in the Steelers game. I need to go back and watch the Bears game to really watch him and only him. So I don't really want to all the way comment on that. But it's incredibly clear that they believe that he needs work as opposed to him auditioning for a job. Otherwise, he would have followed the same routine as Benford and Jackson. Him getting five defensive series is notable here. So the big question is, okay, if it's down to Christian Benford or Dane Jackson and Kyir Elam's out, what do you do with Kyir Elam? Do you trade him? I think back to June when I wrote a potential late summer trade candidate article. And I threw Kyir Elam in there with the context of, hey, they're probably not going to trade him, even though the... Even if he doesn't win the job, they're probably not going to do that. Just because I think they like depth, I think they don't want to give all the way up on the guy, just because they have some history of players they trade away that go on to do great things elsewhere. So they want to give themselves the opportunity. I would believe that... just in case it does click in at some point this season, that he's still on their roster. And I think that holds true today, even though the heat is way hotter on trading Kyir Elam. Depth at cornerback has been a long time problem for this Bills team. Remember the years they were trotting out guys like, gosh, Philip Gaines? You know, not really having anybody at cornerback. They've had to dip into the practice squad way too many times throughout the years. Just don't think that that's a situation they want to get themselves into again. So even if Elam is just out and he is fourth on the boundary cornerback depth chart, I think they value him as depth, as someone that has been in their system for now two full summers and one full regular season and can come in there, and they've seen him have some success in a game setting, you know, very small samples, but they've seen him have some success. So I think they would want to hang on to that above all else. It's tempting because this is when Kyir Elam's value would be at its highest, especially if he ends up not being a starting player in the NFL. You can get more for him right now than you would this time next year, just because he'd still have two more years guaranteed left on his deal. They would have the option for a third year. And so the acquiring team would effectively have roster control on Elam for four seasons. Next year, it goes down, because at that point, you're probably in the mix that he's not going to be a fifth-year option kind of guy. And then it's just a change of scenery deal. So the temperature is very hot with Kaiir Elam right now, but I think they're going to hang on to him. That's my gut instinct about it. You also have to think, what do they have at the depth on the depth chart after Kaiir Elam? Should they move on from him? And the answer would be Jamarcus Ingram, who had a nice game. Don't get me wrong. But it's not at the point where he has all this experience and you feel so good about that option as opposed to Kaiir Elam that you're like, okay, I'm going to give up on the first round pick. So that way, because I feel good about Jamarcus Ingram. That logic just doesn't add up for me. So I think they keep Kaiir Elam, see how he develops this year in the background, work him into some more special teams. Maybe he's a game day inactive. Who knows? I could also hear the argument that that winds up being the case. However, I think Bean will want to see it for himself rather than allowing someone else to see it. But very interesting. It's always extremely interesting whenever a high pick comes into the equation here. So keep an eye on Kaiir Elam, but I think he'll be a Bill by the time final cuts are done. Could be wrong, but that's my read. The linebacker situation, which I think is one of the more compelling positions on the 53-man roster for this cutdown day, just because I think they can go a lot of different ways, and I think it's aided by the fact that Terrell Bernard looks like he's nearing a return. Brandon Bean said on the Bills broadcast that they were anticipating getting Bernard back into practice in some capacity next week. And that's a great sign, especially because the Bills are still over a couple of weeks away from their first game. So even if he's not ready to be a 100% snap guy, you would have to imagine that by the time September 11th rolls around, that the Bills would feel good enough to have Bernard, as long as he doesn't have setbacks, to have him out there in some capacity. And Bernard, to me, has been the biggest winner at middle linebacker, even though he has not played. Dodson continues to struggle in coverage. He got suckered in on play action again in the Bears game. He misread a run on another one. To me, I think he would be the starter only if Terrell Bernard is not healthy. I think they want to see what they have in Bernard. And why shouldn't they? I mean, they drafted him in the third round a couple years ago. In 2022. And kind of similar philosophy to with that I was saying at cornerback. Like the Bills would probably prefer that one of these longer term cost controlled contracts would be the one to win a starting job. So that way you can have that person in place for several years. And Bernard is signed through 2025, just like Christian Benford is. And that would check the box for them if Bernard hits, by the way. But Bernard being able to come back is compelling because now that gives them some flexibility with the linebacker room. I know a lot of people are looking at AJ Klein as in. I'm not one of those people. Klein is not subject to waivers because he's a vested veteran. And I can understand the argument behind it for keeping him, but at the same time, you are using a roster spot on a guy that you can very likely get back to your practice squad because there wouldn't be too much outside interest from other franchises. And he doesn't play special teams. I think he's still behind Tyrell Dodson on the depth chart at middle linebacker. And I think he's comfortably behind Terrell Bernard on the depth chart. So I would argue Bernard being able to practice next week gives them a good indication that they can cut Klein, bring him to the practice squad, and if they need to, call him up on game day if Bernard isn't ready. So, like I said, I'm not going through my entire 53-man roster, which you can go see at The Athletic, but I have the Bills keeping six on the initial cutdown, but with the idea to only have five. So those six are Bernard, Tyrell Dodson, Dorian Williams, Matt Milano, obviously, Tyler Matakevich for special teams. And I know people are like, why don't they cut Matakevich? His salary is fully guaranteed. He's got a void year through next year. It would cost them more on the cap to cut him than it would be to keep him. Plus, they love him on special teams. He's one of their best guys. They're probably going to keep him unless they trade him. And then the last one being Baylen Spector. But Baylen Spector suffering the hamstring injury that he did, I think puts him in, keep him on the initial 53, place him on injured reserve the day after. So that way they can have the versatility or the flexibility, I should say, to bring him back in season. If they just put him on IR right away before final cuts, his season's over. So the hamstring injury, while not great for Baylen Spector, I think was great for the Bills because Spector was one of those guys who might have been on the cut line here. So after they put Spector on IR, they can bring back a vested veteran of their choosing. For instance, I chose Reed Ferguson because he has no guaranteed money on his contract. They can just cut him, bring him back, fully guarantee his this year, and give him a little signing bonus for his trouble. And you can only do that with a vested veteran, and that's something that Ferguson is. So that puts them in that spot. So that way they end up with, in my projection, five linebackers in Bernard, Dodson, Milano, Dorian Williams, and Tyler Matakevich. Now, the other thing to maybe keep an eye on is if they don't think Dorian Williams, because of his calf injury, might be able to play in the first 2 to 3 games of the season. Maybe that's a same situation as Spector, where they keep him initially, throw him on IR, and then that would open up a spot for AJ Klein after the final cuts. They would have to cut him first, obviously. But that's, to me, the strongest way that Klein could get on, because Klein is third string middle linebacker. He's third string outside linebacker. And he doesn't play special teams all that much. That sounds like a practice squad guy to me. Next, which is a hotly debated position, the offensive line. Now, I get that a lot of people are concerned about it. I think they had a stronger showing in this game than they did against the Steelers. And I think right now there are 7 guys who are absolutely locked into the offensive line, that being the starters. Left tackle Deion Dawkins, left guard Connor McGovern, and we'll have to see what the progress of his injury is that he suffered in practice this week. Center Mitch Morse, right guard Osiris Torrence, and I think that competition is done. I don't care what the Bills say. All we have seen is Osiris Torrence playing right guard with the first team offense over the last 3 preseason games. I think it's done. And then right tackle Spencer Brown. Then their top 2 reserves, Ryan Bates, who is kind of a jack of all trades, their top backup center, and David Edwards, who I think is their top backup guard and certainly has a ton of starting experience. He got the start at left guard for McGovern, and I think that would probably be their play if McGovern's not ready to start the season. So those seven guys are in. From there, that's where it gets interesting. Because what do? You have a couple of veteran players who have struggled this summer in David Quisenberry and Ike Butker. Can throw Greg Mantz into the equation too. And then you have some younger guys who don't necessarily have experience, but have showed you something. And those guys are Ryan Vandermark, who I've talked about quite a bit over the last 2-3 weeks. And then the sneaky one is Alec Anderson, who got some snaps at right tackle against the Bears, which means they are trying to find ways to convince themselves that keeping Alec Anderson is a good idea. I mean, think about it. The guy in the Bears game alone, he took snaps at center, at right guard, and at right tackle. The only place along the line that I have not seen Alec Anderson take snaps at this summer is left tackle. And he did that in college. Now, I don't know if you're going to want to go into a game and say, look, we're going to have Alec Anderson be the starter or be the first offensive tackle in if something happens to one of those guys. But at the same time, having a guy who can play borderline all five of your offensive line positions, that is valuable. And being that young and on a cost-controlled deal for the next, let's see, I believe he is, I'll double-check this just to make sure, but I believe Anderson is along the same lines as Ryan Vandermark, to where he is signed through the next two seasons. Yes, he is. They're both signed through the next two seasons. Both guys will be an exclusive rights free agent for 2025, which effectively means that the Bills own that player's rights and that the player has two options. They can either sign that exclusive rights tender for a minimal amount, or they can leave the NFL. Really no other way, as long as the Bills pick up that option. So that's 3 years of cost-controlled play. And then in the 2025 offseason, I'm sorry, the 2026 offseason, both of those guys would be restricted free agents, which means the Bills have their rights yet again. So these are two guys that the Bills spent all year last year developing. They have shown flashes. They have shown improvement. Vandermark played well at right tackle today, I thought, against the Bears. They've seen him play well both at left and right. Anderson has given them reps on all three interior positions, showed he can play right tackle in a pinch. Might not be great, but they showed he can. And then couple that with Butker and Quisenberry really struggling this summer. So my big surprise of my 53-man roster is having Vandermark and Anderson in and Butker and Quisenberry out. Now, stay with me here. Butker and Quisenberry are not subject to waivers. And those are two guys who are up there in their career. Obviously, some struggles there. The Bills can probably get them back to the practice squad. So, to me, this is a win-win situation. Because what is the more valuable commodity to an organization, especially in an atmosphere where offensive line talent is just so hard to come by, especially young offensive line talent? If you have a couple of guys that you think can play and work for your system, you hang on to those guys, especially when you have 4 years of roster control on each of them. Whereas with Butker and Quisenberry, they're on one-year deals. You got nothing after this year. And you can probably replace them with someone else pretty easily in their same sort of archetype. You can find a journeyman veteran offensive tackle to come in on the practice squad. You can find another interior lineman that his best years are probably behind him to throw on your practice squad. Those are easier to replace than a Vandermark or Anderson. So that's why I've got both the young guys in as their eighth and ninth, put Quesenberry and Butker on the practice squad as long as no one signs them to their active roster. And that way you have the veteran experience. And if one of your top offensive linemen get hurt the next week, you can call up Butker or Quesenberry from the practice squad for that game. I think it's a win-win. Throw a third win at the end for Michael Scott and call it a day. But we'll see, because maybe Bean wants to hang on with both hands to every offensive tackle that he has, and meaning David Quesenberry. I think Vandermark's in. Anderson is the one that I was kind of on the fence about, but the logic for me is just too strong to have him on the outside looking in. I think both of those guys have a pretty solid chance of getting claimed on waivers, and I don't know that that Brandon Bean and the Bills should be willing to risk that. So that's the offensive line and how it plays out to me. There's other guys out like Greg Mance and Richard Garage and Kevin Jarvis. I don't think they have a shot. One very little thing about the offensive line that I thought was gamesmanship. The Bills did not play Nick Broeker in that Bears game. And I don't know of an injury to Nick Broeker, which to me means they were trying to hide their late round pick because they liked what he did against the Steelers. And they should have liked what he did against the Steelers. He played well. But I don't think they want to use a roster spot on him this year. So I think they probably rather get him to the practice squad, develop him there, and wonder if he could be a reserve guy for them moving forward. So that was a sneaky little thing. Broeker did not play, even though there was a lot of opportunity for him to do so. So keep an eye out for Broeker getting being one of their priorities to the practice squad. All right, the final, I guess, player that I'm sure everyone's probably wondering about is Andy Isabella. Great camp story. Came in late. Moved ahead of a lot of different guys. Like, moved ahead very quickly of the bottom of the receiver depth chart. Worked himself into a spot where he could be looked at as maybe the seventh or eighth receiver on the step chart. I just don't know if there's a spot there for him. They have six receivers right now that I think are in. Justin Shorter is in, and I think Justin Shorter could even have a game day role, not on offense, but on special teams. I think he can factor in there. Khalil Shakir, despite him having a pretty uneven summer, I still think he's probably good because they want to see about his potential. If they cut him, he's probably gone on waivers, and I don't know that they want to do that. Whereas, same kind of logic with the offensive line here. If you cut Khalil Shakir, he's probably gone and claimed. If you cut Andy Isabella, because he was open to sign with anybody, you can probably get him back to the practice squad. And if not, so be it. But I would, if I were them, I would probably protect the investment rather than adding a somewhat redundant piece to your receiver room, because they have Shakir, Shakir would be the potentially the one to go here in this situation. They already have Deontay Hardy. They already have Trent Sherfield, who can play all three receiver spots. Stephon Diggs can slide inside to slot receiver. they don't need to keep Isabella. Like, and I don't think he's going to be their top kick returner. I think that's going to be Deonte Hardy, both on kick return and punt return. So, good story. I don't think the story with Isabella in Buffalo is over. I think they could get him to the practice squad. And I think they would love to get him to the practice squad as one of their six veteran guys this year. So, Isabella, I know, he was a fan favorite. There's always one. There's always one receiver where everybody's like, is there a spot for that guy? I just couldn't get there. There's too many other special teams spots that they needed. I think they are prioritizing their defensive line. I think they want to keep five safeties. So there's just, there wasn't a way for me to find a spot for another receiver. But we'll see. Like I said, any of this stuff could be wrong, but this is all based on what I'm watching at practice, preseason games, talking with people. This is what's on my brain and where I land ultimately for how the Bills 53-man roster shakes out. All right. So I think that's going to do it for me. The Bills are through their preseason. They'll make their roster decisions. Brandon Bean said on the Bills broadcast that they might do it in waves. So we might find some things out on Sunday, maybe Monday. But they have to have their roster down to 53 by Tuesday at 4 p.m. And it will surely be interesting because they have a lot of intriguing names that could go. And we'll see what the heck they do at backup quarterback, which is one of the most interesting things to track in the next few days. All right. So thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Biscaglia, and we will talk to you after cutdown day, where the regular season is here. And all that's left is for the Bills to prepare for the New York Jets in week 1. All right, we'll talk to you later this week. See you then.